Take a unique look at the National Football League with Pro Football View from the East, a program dedicated to bringing listeners in-depth coverage on all 32 teams. Join host Joe Tufaro, a lifelong Giants fan, and Dennis Agapito, a die-hard Jets fan, as they offer up hard-hitting opinions and analysis on the NFL from a New York perspective. So, let's start the show. From the East, here's Joe and Dennis.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome into another fantastic episode of Pro Football View from the East. This is one of your hosts, Dennis Agapito, and I just want to give you some quick information on how to follow the show. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search Pro Football View from the East. I found that Stitcher works pretty good with Android devices if you have one of them. Also, I'm on Twitter. It's PFVFE. And my good friend, colleague, guy who I got a feel for today because, you know, we discussed the game, the big game. This Joe Tufaro, he's on Twitter. He's at Tufton. So, Joe, welcome into the program. I mean, are we still mourning? Are we over it a little bit? Or, you know, kind of, you know, give me how you're feeling personally before we actually get into the game.
Well, it's 12:01, so it's not still morning. It is afternoon here in California. So, I'm not still mourning. Actually, I wasn't mourning at all. It's one of those, this is how this year has gone. And if, you know, if the Cowboys win tonight, we could have a six win team win this division. I don't think anyone's going to be too proud to win this division this year. The only thing I'd be impressed with is if the Redskins finish out the quest here and run the table and get to 10 wins, then I'll be impressed with the Redskins, and I'll be impressed with Gruden, and I'll be impressed with Cousins and all that they've done, and the changeover that they made there from Robert Griffin and the whole deal. I'll be impressed with that. But other than that, this division is just awful. And, you know, the Eagles go out and beat almost lose again to a Patriot team that has nobody to throw the ball to, who has nothing to play for at this point. They've already wrapped up the East and obviously are going to the playoffs. So, you know, tough day. But again, this is, you and I were texting all day together, and this is just how this season has gone. I said to you at the time, they need 7 more. When it was at 20 points, I said they're going to need 7 more. And they just can't get it done at the end. There's the difference between this team and let's say 2011, which a lot of people were trying to draw some comparisons to, is there doesn't seem to be that next man availability on this team. You know, we just went through a pretty special time in baseball in New York, and as you watch the playoffs with the Mets, you know, it was a different guy every night, right, Dennis? It was Duda on one night, it was Flores on another night, it was Granderson, it was Cespedes, it was, you know, different people all the time. And it just seems that it's Eli and Odell, and that's it. There's no one else, and Will Tye. But there's no, you know, Reuben Randall has done nothing to step up and try to take some of the pressure off Odell. Nix has caught 2 balls. There's just none of that next guy to make a play to step up on defense and make a play. You know, we all thought maybe there'd be a turnover somewhere down the line, and 2 dropped interceptions on the last drive by the Jets. And there's just nothing special about this team, and they're going to finish up the way that they are. And we see where it goes. Does it lead to a complete cleaning house? I don't believe so. I could see Tom Coughlin retiring, but I don't see Jerry Reese getting fired. And I don't see, I'm not even sure Tom's going, but, I'm sure there'll be a lot of changes and again, another roster turnover of 25-30% of your guys. But disappointing, you know, but not unexpected.
Well, Joe, I guess we're going to have to address the white elephant in the room, which is, of course,
why is he white?
In my opinion, the odd decision by you really like Tom Coughlin. And, you know, look, if I had – a combination of Tom Coughlin, Jerry Reese, who had brought the Jets the kind of success that they brought the Giants, I would have some loyalty to them too. But you know the play I'm talking about, and the controversial play, which was the 4th-and-2 decision to go for the touchdown rather than kick the field goal which would have put them up by 13, which would have left about, you know, close to 9 minutes, 8:40 something around there, with you know, again, a chip shot field goal, assuming they make it. It's now 23-10. The Jets would have to score two touchdowns in eight and change when they had only scored one touchdown up to that point. And obviously they go for it. Rontez Miles, a person who I've met personally who has been on the practice squad, has been called up. He's actually a pretty decent player, has got made the most of his opportunities up here with the Jets. Intercepts Eli Manning, runs it back to the kind of the 15, 17-yard line. So it does give them a little space. So the kind of the thought process is, well, if right. we don't make it, we're going to be pinning them back. Now, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, okay, the 17-yard line is still pinned back a little bit, but it's almost like a kickoff if you kicked it, say, to the, and they got right. it at the 20. So, right. I mean, what's your opinion on that play? Because – hey, you know what? I've heard a lot of pretty negative things said about it, and a lot of people are saying that this is, quote-unquote, going to cost Coughlin his retirement.
Well, and I texted you at the time, before the play, and I said, I go for it here first guess. So I wanted to be on record that I thought I would go for it. And for that very reason that you just said, Dennis, sure, he certainly didn't send in – the play wasn't throw an interception. The play was, let's try to score a touchdown. See, you know, read the defense, see what we got, run this and see if we can't get in the end zone. Again, Jets played very well. There's some other stuff. The mistake, obviously, is the execution part of it where you throw the interception. Because as you said, you didn't leave them on the half-yard line. You now left them on the 17-yard line, which changes everything. Because you figure if you're on the half-yard line, you kind of know they're running the ball. You know, at least on first down, they're going to have to maybe even sneak it and waste it down to get them some space. So I think without going into the thought process of how many things can go wrong if I call this play, he went with the how many things can go right. Is I can score it, make it a true two-score game, which because it's 17 points then, right? Then it's really a three-score game. And you put it away right there, even though there's eight and a half, 9 minutes to go. You go up 13, the answer is, what's the difference between 10 and 13? I could still lose the game. And you did drive the field twice on us, as you say. So I'm sure there's a little bit of, here's what I would think, a little bit of lack of confidence in the defense because they haven't been able to do it all year long. A little bit of, are we going to get the ball back and do anything with it? Because we hadn't really shown we could do too much. That whole drive was penalties and some really, really nice catches by Odell. But again, you can't do that the whole way down. And I think he thought, this is my chance to be aggressive, stay aggressive, put it in the hands of my playmaker, who made a huge mistake. I mean, I would rather see him throw that ball away at that point than force it into someplace. And again, then take away the advantage that you had gained by getting the ball down to the half yard line. So I agree with you. It's controversial. It's, you know, it's not costing anybody's job. God, you know, the guy's not leaving unless he wants to leave. Because again, name me one coach who's out there who could come to the New York Giants now who's won two Super Bowls. And the next guy, you know, as somebody said, the next guy you hire is probably not going to do that, no matter who it is. But, you know, there's nobody out there that's chomping at the bit that you're saying, oh, my God, we have to get this guy as a head coach. It's going to be a complete change. And if you're going to completely change coaches, which means they're probably not going to want it, they're not going to want to walk in and use McAdoo's offense if you're going to hire a Nick Saban type, or if you're going to, and I'm not saying him, but if you bring the guy in from Stanford, he's not going to want to use McAdoo's offense, and maybe he doesn't even like Spagnuolo. If you're going to bring in a big, high-powered guy, you're going to start from scratch. And maybe the thought is, here's what I would do if I'm the owner. I sit down calmly, and I talk about a few things, and I say, hey, why don't we let Tom stay until Eli goes? And keep that consistency of coach and quarterback. Because why keep changing things? Why ruin the last 3 years of his career changing coordinators, changing head coaches, changing all these different things? That's my thought process on it. But, again, I said at the time I'd go for it. I still would. I would just hope my quarterback wouldn't force a ball into a spot where it could be picked off like that. And again, give him that run back because you lost the advantage that you thought you were going to have. So. That's been my take on it since the beginning, and you know I sent that to you at the time and said, this is what I would do right now. I sent it to you during the commercial. So that's my thought, and that's how I would do it. And doesn't work out. And again, and he was right. You did drive the ball on us twice, pretty easily. As Dan Fouts even said, here, let me help the Giants out. Here's Eric Decker. He's going to catch the ball over the middle for the fourth time in a row if you don't cover him. So that's where I stand on it.
But let me ask you a question, Joe. Earlier in the game, Knicks caught a ball. I think it was Keem Knicks caught a ball, got down to about the half-yard line, third and goal. They got stopped on a run. Why didn't they try to score the touchdown there?
Well, because it's not towards the end of the game. You're not looking at maybe only having one possession left. It was in the first half.
Well, wait. Towards the end of the game, Joe, it was the Jets had only scored one touchdown up to that point.
But you've driven the ball all day. Besides the fumble and the kickoff return, we hadn't done anything either. So you can't think that it's just going to be the same. What makes you think that you couldn't score two touchdowns against us? We've been lucky that you hadn't scored anything against us. I'll tell you.
But wasn't it easier for them to score a touchdown in the field? I mean, I know they said they went down the field twice. But they only had to kick the field goal. It was fourth down. They kicked the field goal. They may not have made it.
Yeah, but what I just said to you is his plan was not for him to tell him to throw an interception. His plan was if I don't.
I understand that.
Number one, he's saying, I think I should be able to run the ball for half a yard after practicing.
Well, then why not go for it earlier, Joe? That's my question. Go for it early. If you're going to go for the jugular and you don't trust your defense, you got to put touchdowns on the board. You're a yard away from a touchdown. It's fourth and one. Go in, score the touchdown. Instead of going up 10-3, which is one score, if you don't have any trust in the defense, go up 14-3.
It's different with only 8 minutes to go in the game than it is with two quarters
to go in the game.
Why is it
different? Isn't the difference that later in the game you want to put more pressure? Because Joe, listen, I mean, again, you know that I'm not going to break your chops about this and go that the Jets
I didn't call it.
New York,
so, no, I didn't make the call.
I understand, but
he didn't ask the quarterback to throw an interception. That wasn't the play.
Well, of course, no one asked
the
quarterback. They didn't ask Chris Ivory to fumble either, but he did.
Well,
you know, the Giants, they didn't ask.
But are you blaming? Are you blaming Todd Bowles for that? Are you blaming Todd Bowles for the fumble?
Yes, I'm blaming his special teams coach. His special teams coach has been terrible this year, and I think he should be fired.
For the fumble. For Chris Ivory's fumble. Are you blaming Todd Bowles for having him in the game?
That wasn't fourth down. If it was fourth down and they decided to run it from there, when they could have
fumbled, you'd blame it on the coach?
Joe, hold on a second.
You'd blame it on the coach?
No.
Would you blame it on the coach? Answer my question. If he fumbles on fourth down, you blame it on the coach?
But he could have kicked a field goal, a gimme field goal, and it would not have been
in that
situation.
All, nothing's a gimme. Nothing's a gimme, first of all. Second of all, he thought at that point he knows who's been hurt on his team throughout the game. He knows who he's missing. He knows where he has confidence and where he doesn't have confidence. And he has more confidence in Eli Manning, as should everybody else in the world, than he does in his defense, that he's not going to do what he did.
So then isn't it Eli Manning's fault because he didn't execute the play? So maybe he should be benched.
He should. But we don't have anybody better, so you can't bench him. It's the same thing as firing a coach. If you don't get anybody better,
so Eli Manning cost the Giants the game, not Tom Coughlin's decision not to kick the field goal. You see, if they had kicked the field, let's just say hypothetically here, because last week you discussed the Patriots a little bit. We were discussing the Patriots. And you had said that you wanted them to be aggressive and score the touchdown because you wanted to give Tom Brady the ball to go down and score a touchdown because it is much harder to score a touchdown than it is to get a field goal. Well, by running that play there.
In that time frame. You can't leave out half the equation. It's the time frame and the number of timeouts.
There's 8 and change left, 8:42 left in the game, and the Jets would have needed
two touchdowns. So it's not the last time they're going to get the ball. Yeah.
They would have needed two touchdowns.
Plenty of time.
But let's say the ball was on the 15-yard line. Should they have gone for it then?
No, but here's the question. Here's the difference. Fourth and two on the 15.
You don't trust. It's fourth and two on the 15. You're going to kick the field goal and go up by 13?
Yeah, because, again, I wanted to leave them the ball on the half-yard line. Again, you're taking bits and pieces. It's the whole scenario. The other point is he got the ball back with 3:50 on the clock, and he thinks he can run the ball. He thinks he can run the timeout, Tom does. He has confidence in this offense that when they got the ball back with 3:50 after you kick the field goal, that he can run the clock down to zero. And what'd they do? They went 3 and out. His confidence is misplaced at this point. And you know why it's misplaced? Because he has a bad team. This is not a good football team.
Well, why is it
not
bad team,
a good
Joe?
football? It's a bad team because they have lousy linebackers. They have an offensive line that's non-existent. They have one wide receiver. They have zero running backs. That's why there's four of them playing. And they have two guys in the secondary that can play. The other guys, if they brought Cooper Taylor back off the street. The guy was cut off of their practice squad, brought him back, and now all of a sudden he's starting because they don't have any depth. It's a bad football team.
And who puts the football team together?
Jerry Reese and Tom Coughlin.
No.
Again, you can't use half the equation. You can't use half the equation, Dennis. The next person who I was about to say that puts the team together is the team doctors, because we've had more injuries at specific spots than you can count on three hands. So that counts too. They thought they had guys who were going to be on the offensive line. They've had five of them get hurt. What are you going to do? You had both safeties go out in preseason. You had three left tackles go down. You've had linebackers get hurt. It's a bad football team because guys who they counted on, Victor Cruz was supposed to come back. Did he ever come back and play? No. Is that Jerry Reese's fault? No. Is Jerry Reese's fault the fact that they waited for John Beeson for 8 weeks before he decided he couldn't play anymore? Yeah, it is. I have no problem laying blame at Jerry Reese's feet. He also did pick Eric Flowers and Odell Beckham in the last 2 years, but his middle-round guys have been awful. And his free agent signings, he keeps trying to get these big upside guys for cheap money, and they really haven't worked out. The last good guy he got that he brought in on the cheap and did well and did something for the team was Kavika Mitchell back in 2007. That's the last good free agent they've signed. So he's doing a poor job. But he's also got two Super Bowl rings, Dennis. So he knows what he's doing.
I understand that.
And I know people say
Napoleon has Super Bowl ring, but he's not working. He's not working anywhere for the football team.
He's 90 years old.
But just because
he's 90 years old.
Joe, when was the last time the Giants went to the playoffs? Listen, I'm just trying. Forget the
2011 when they won the Super Bowl.
2011. It's been a
when
while.
They won
Maybe it's time for the Giants to move on. Look, this is not a Giants team that I recognize.
But why would you move on?
Because obviously somebody's missing something here. Coughlin or Reese, or they're not on the same page, or whatever it is. This is not the Giant team that I remember, the Super Bowl teams that had that pass rush, that had that line that was solid, that they could actually run the ball.
So
this
you
is
knew
not,
that
this
JPC
is
was
two guys.
Ball
you even said it. This is
you
two
knew
guys.
JPP
you
was
even
blow
said
his
it.
Off? You knew JPP was going to blow his hand off?
This is, but look,
you
every
knew Jonathan
team
Atkins
deals with
was
different
get
adversity
hurt?
On their team. The Jets didn't have Darrell Revis or Marcus Williams. Two of their better – Marcus Williams is leading the Jets in interceptions. Darrell Revis is still one of the better cover corners in this league. I mean, the Jets had their share of injuries. They have a share.
Everybody has a share.
The Jets tried to give this game to the Giants. They made bad penalties, mistakes.
We don't like to take this.
Well, the Jets were trying to give you an early Christmas present. The Jets made mistakes, penalties.
Do you want to hear Eli's take? Do you want to hear Eli's take on this?
Sure. I'll hear Eli's take.
I just got it on an email to my inbox right now. So what was the play? And he says, you're talking about the fourth down? He says, it was the play we had run earlier in the year. We had great success with it, and they covered it well the way they tried to pass it off. Safety came down, and I would have had to work a second window or come back on my back route, but they got pressure, and I didn't have that luxury. Still thought I could maybe hit Ruben, just kind of running by. The defender wasn't looking at me. He was looking at Ruben. I thought Ruben could run by him and still possibly make the catch or get an interference call. Didn't work out that way. And that's the answer. We thought we had a great play for what the defense was going to be. We've run it before. We've had great success for it. We had confidence that we could do it. Didn't work out that well. The Jets played it very well.
So knowing what you know now, Joe, and you're in charge and you're the coach, knowing what you know now, would you still run that play?
Are you saying that I know that it doesn't work?
Knowing that you could have gone up by 13.
No, of course I do the same thing because I said it yesterday. That's what I would have done at the time. And if I'm the offense, if I call a timeout, which I do, okay, and we come over to the sideline and I have my Hall of Fame, borderline Hall of Fame quarterback who's won two Super Bowls, I have my offensive coordinator, who I've now worked with for 2 years. I have my wide receivers coach standing there, and we look at it and we say, we're going to run X53 Red 19. And they say, because this is where we work, this is the defense they're running, we've looked at all the papers, we've looked at all the pictures, this is what we have the most confidence in, what do you want to do? And he says, go for it. I have no problem with that. I have no problem with that. I really don't.
So you're saying that the team has no confidence in the offense or the defense? No, they had confidence in the offense.
They had to have confidence in the offense.
Well, why wouldn't you go up by three scores
if you have confidence in your offense? He has confidence in his offense. That's what he is. He's standing there with all the guys with the brain trust. He didn't do it on a whim. He didn't do it as a part of emotion. He called the timeout and brought him over there and had the discussion. And he made a decision. I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. And then after that,
but Joe, don't you think that there are people out there who, I mean, okay, I know you're a big Coughlin supporter. There are a lot of people who are Giants fans. I mean, I saw a lot on social media who thought that, who had expressed concerns. Not just on this play, though, Joe, not just on this play.
But after any of the plays or games. So after you lose to the Patriots, I have a problem
But Joe, you text me that you would go for it, but I was thinking, why not go up by 13? The Jets haven't done much on offense.
But my question is,
you know, the Jets had 200 yards after that happened of offense, and they only had about 200 yards up to that point.
Yeah, so isn't that more of a reason to go for it? That play right there swung the momentum right in the Jets' favor, and they never looked back.
They never looked back. And you know why?
And you know why? Because it didn't leave them on the half-yard line. The greatest.
Well, don't you have to think of that as an equation, that what if we turn the ball over here and come away with nothing?
And again, you're not listening, Dennis. The greatest part of this decision is he's staring at a borderline Hall of Fame quarterback who he's been with since day one. That's the guy he has confidence in. Does he have to pull him over by the face mask and say, hey, by the way, don't throw it to the other team. That's not what he wants to do. Okay? He takes everything into account. But taking into account, he's staring at Eli Manning. He's not looking at you know, whoever. We could come up with a few names if you want. They'd all wore green and white in the past. You're not looking at somebody who can't get the job done, who you have no confidence in. He has 100% confidence in his quarterback. You're saying he has no confidence in offensive defense. No, he does. He's got a lot of confidence in the guy.
If he has 100% confidence in Eli Manning, then why didn't he go for it? And he has very little confidence in his defense. Then why didn't he go for it earlier in the game when it was fourth down on the 1 yard line, Joe?
Because it's too early. I know you're going to get the ball 10 more times. No, Dennis, you're wrong. If you know you're getting the ball 5-6 more times, you don't have to chase the points there. He's thinking he's only getting it once or twice, and that's it. And that's all he's going to get it back. He knows that because now
what happened after that? The Jets got the ball back and they went and they drove down the field. And what happened after that? Well, it does matter because the Jets drove down the field. And what was the end result of their first drive down the field?
But you got to understand that. See, you can't do that. You can't sit here and go, oh, well, they kicked the field goal. Yeah, I know they kicked the field goal, but they also didn't go for it on fourth down anywhere along the line.
I understand that, but they would have been forced to go for it on fourth down. They would have been forced to go for it.
No, because your other plays are different. When you know you can come up to a certain point and you only have to get there to get the one score and then get the ball back, you think completely different. It's not one play. You don't sit there and go, oh, well, we kicked it there because we're not going to go on fourth down. The rest of the plays are different, too. You can't do that. And then I'm going to say to you, well, then fine. Would you run all the same plays if you're on the half-yard line than when you were on the 17?
Well, it sure looked like they were being very – I mean, they ran 10 passes in a row, Joe. They didn't run the ball once.
But if you're on the half-yard line, would you have done that?
They abandoned the run. They ran down the field. They went down the field throwing the ball.
And you're proving my point, Dennis. You're proving my point. You threw the ball against our defense who couldn't get a pass rush all of a sudden and who couldn't cover Eric Decker. So what made
well,
you
they
think
were trying to go down the field to score. They weren't going down the field to score a field goal. They weren't going down the field to score a field goal. They were going down the field to score a touchdown. But when they got bogged down, it made the decision very easy.
No, you're wrong. You're completely wrong. You can't do that. You can't go back and say, well, this is what exactly would have happened and just plug it into that spot. You play the game completely different. That's completely unfair. None of those play calls would have been the same if you had been on the half-yard line. None of them would have been on the thing if you had gotten a kickoff. None of those plays are the same. You can't do that. You can't just start the game from there. You can't. You can't just start the game from there. It's not fair to anybody to do that because that's not how it works. And you know that too. You know that everything sets up something else. Everything causes something else. You can't just start from somewhere.
So what's the ultimate cause of this collapse?
What's that?
What's the ultimate cause of this? Because they still had a 10-point lead even after that.
Yeah.
Okay? They still had a 10-point lead.
They're not very good. They're not a good defense.
To tell you the truth, Joe, watching that game, and again, the Jets,
the
I'm going to give you the statistic on the Jets. Let me give you the statistic on the Jets. The teams that the Jets have beaten have a combined 27-44 record. That's the teams that they've beaten. The Jets are not a good team. I mean, it's 7-5. They're in the playoff race. We're going to discuss the playoff race in a minute. We're going to get off this. I'm not trying to make Joe upset.
He's very passionate about his Giants.
You're
missing the point is what I'm trying to tell you. What are the combined records of teams we've beaten?
Probably something similar, but the point is that the Jets are not a juggernaut team. They're not a great team. Neither are the Giants.
Neither are we.
So
I'm telling you,
we're
a bad football team. I've said the
words. Well, the Jets are not a great football team either. They're not.
They're
not a
10-win
team.
You're better than
the Patriots where you're handing the ball back. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick is the
quarterback. Take a compliment. You're better than us. We stink. We're a bad football team. We have no offensive line. We have no defensive line. We have no linebackers. We have two guys that can play defense. You have DRC and Prince Amukamara when he's healthy, and he's never healthy. You got nothing. You got Odell Beckham, you got Eli Manning, and you got DRC and Prince when he's healthy. That's the extent of this team at this point. That's it. We're no good. We're not going to beat anybody else. People are now saying things like, oh, you know, if Dallas wins tonight, you guys are right where you were. Who cares? You want to win seven games and host a home playoff game and get destroyed? The point isn't getting there. See, maybe this is the disconnect between the Jets and Giants in real life. Who cares if you make it into the postseason if you're not going to win anything?
Well, you don't know that.
The goal isn't to get there.
You've got
to
get there first before you can get the other goal.
We're not going to. We're not going to.
Well, what were the Giants in 2011? What was their record when they won the Super Bowl? What was their record?
9-7.
9-7.
Not 7-9. That's a big difference. We're not getting
there. But you know, Carolina went into the playoffs last year, 7-9, and won a playoff game and went to Seattle and played competitive.
This team's not doing it. Guess what? They didn't win anything last year either.
Joe, I understand you're passionate about Coughlin and you like Coughlin. I understand you're passionate. If they had kicked the field goal and they had lost by a point, I would say I would agree with you. And look, I don't think the Jets played well. I don't think the Giants played well. I was not impressed with the Giants. I didn't get to watch them last week. And I have
issues. So if they score the touchdown and they lose, what do you say then?
If the Giants have scored a touchdown and lost then they say they really stink because they should. Yeah. Why are they? But Joe,
I'm telling you, they don't have anybody.
If the ball's on the 8-yard line and it's 4th and 2, you don't go for it. You kick the field goal. I don't see what it wasn't 4th and 1 inch or 4th and a half yard.
You were taking a penalty. You had taken a penalty, Dennis, on the play before to go half the distance to the goal line. The ball was on the half-yard line. The ball was a length of the football away. That's all it was. It was a length of the football away. And that's where he thought he could leave it. When they sat there and went through the good things that could happen, the last thing somebody said to him was, worst case scenario, you leave them on their own half-yard line.
No, the
that's
ball was on the 4-yard line.
Words. That's
the ball
last
was on the 4-yard line. 4th and 2 from the 4-yard line. The Jets 4-yard line.
4-yard line. Fine. So
it wasn't the half-yard line. I could understand if it was the half-yard line.
But you say the worst thing that can happen, you leave them inside their 5-yard line. That's the worst.
Well, they didn't.
Thing
that isn't the worst thing that could happen. I mean, look at the Patriots.
I know, but
I'm
telling you, this is the confidence he has in Eli. Is it misplaced? I don't know. I don't think so. Do people make mistakes? Yeah, he did. I'm sorry he made a mistake. I'm sorry you're so upset that we made a mistake to let you back in and win. I'm really tell you what that bothers me. It doesn't bother me. This team is no good. This team is not. The best thing that can happen to this team is they go out and get better players, because that's what it needs. It's not a good football team. You and I both said this in preseason. You thought the Jets were even worse than this. And we both said, I don't think this – we almost didn't do this show, Dennis, as just a Giants-Jets show. The reason why we didn't do this show as Giants-Jets show was what? We both said, we don't think there's going to be anything to watch by the middle of the season. It's not a good football team. I don't know how many more times I can say it. It's not a good football team. Does he forced into making decisions that he doesn't want to make? Yeah. I have no problem with him trying to be aggressive, trying to get a win right there, trying to put the game away right there. I don't have a problem with it. And if you know what, Dennis? If he doesn't come back next year, I'm still going to hold him in the same regard as everybody else should, as one of the best coaches in the league. And if Bill Belichick's the greatest coach, which I heard 3 or 4 times yesterday, ever to coach in the league, and he's beaten him twice in Super Bowls, I have no problem with that legacy.
Nobody's disputing that fact. But they haven't made the playoffs in a long time. And eventually, are you going to say he's going to stay to the end of Eli's career? What if he comes back next year and they're 6-10?
I didn't say that. It's not my decision.
Well, you said you have a conversation about having him back. Look,
I would think that's what I, if I was
the
owner, if I was the owner, I would make sure that part of that was in my discussions as to where are we, because you can't just do, see, here's the problem with most people, and you know this. Most people will say, we'll only give you the solution, we'll only give you the immediate solution. Fire the coach. Okay? Guess what comes after that? What comes after that is the decision of who's going to replace him. Okay, it's the same thing as getting rid of a quarterback. How many people wanted to get rid of Phillip Rivers this year? The answer that came after that, or Drew Brees, the answer that comes after that is, well, who are you going to get to fill those shoes, right? We've had this conversation a lot with paying players. You got to replace him with somebody. Is there somebody out there? Some idiot called up the other day, said he thought Kirk Ferentz would be perfect to come to the Giants, who lost to Michigan State the other night. I'm like, maybe the Michigan State guy who's won for 17 years, maybe he would be somebody who I'd look at. Certainly not looking at another guy that almost got fired from Iowa a couple of years back. People live too much in this second, this moment. You know, how many years ago did we hear that Gruden and Cowher would be the two greatest, you know, they're going to get hired somewhere because they're fantastic. Any of them have jobs in the league? Any of them done any better than Tom Coughlin's done in the league? At some point, you're going to have to make a change. I don't know who the change is, and you better make sure when you make it, you don't do what we did when Parcells left, is give it to somebody who's completely incapable of coaching the team. So it's not my decision. People think as fans, you're owed some kind of decision on this. What they're owed is a better football team, not a better coaching staff. The coaching staff is fine. You need better players, and you need guys who are going to stay healthy.
Should Jerry Reese be out? That's my next question. Is it Jerry Reese? I mean, Jerry Reese is the GM. He's the one who said he's made some picks. And look, any GM, John Idzik made good picks. I mean, he picked Sheldon Richardson, who was Defensive Rookie of the Year. I mean,
Calvin Pryor had a great year, but he's out in his year after two years.
So,
well,
I mean,
saying, but,
my question
but
is,
he had,
should Jerry
he had
Reese
nothing
be out?
Behind it. Well, because don't forget, Idzik had nothing behind it. No, nobody could look at Idzik and say, well, he's done this in the past. If you go back from 2007, which is Jerry's first year, 7 was fantastic, right? We all can agree his draft in 7 was magnificent because they all played and they won the Super Bowl. So pretty good. Then you start going through, okay, pick JPP, who, if he hadn't gotten hurt, he was a 9th-round pick, and that was in 2010, and they won the Super Bowl the next year, and he's an integral part of that. David Wilson was the biggest set. David Wilson getting hurt and not being able to play and for any significant time is the same thing as picking a quarterback in the top of the draft and having him not be able to play. You wasted a fantastic draft pick in 2012 of getting a guy who could have been the next Adrian Peterson and then gets hurt and can't do anything. So, again, some of the stuff he's had some bad luck with. Has he made some awful picks? Has he picked Philip Dillard as a middle linebacker from Nebraska? Has he picked somebody? You know, this is like the Brian Cashman thing where you can go back and name all the bad picks he's got. He's had some bad middle-of-the-round drafts, and he's also been very bad at free agents. And, yeah, he has to be looked at. Again, it's hard to say, you know, The other question, Dennis, that besides to say who am I going to replace him with, if you let Jerry Reese go at the end of this year, you think he's getting a job?
He might not get a GM job, but he'll get a job in a front office somewhere. I'm sure he would.
You don't think he'd get hired to run another team with some of the success that he's had?
I think he would get a front office job. I mean, Mike Tannenbaum got hired eventually. It took him a year.
No,
I'm
saying
year as a
GM.
John Idzik got hired by, yeah, you know. So
I'm saying
yeah,
as a GM.
I think he would definitely get hired in a front office. But
you don't
think
he'd get another GM
this
job?
I don't think he'd get a GM job right away, but I think he could eventually work his way into one if he got into an organization that kind of needed one.
I think somebody like a Tennessee, I think somebody like a
Detroit Lions.
Detroit would definitely hire him with his resume having – if you read the good parts of his resume and not dwell on the two or three bad picks that he's made, or again – you got to leave David Wilson in there as part of the conversation. If you say, look, you know, Odell Beckham lasted a long time. Landon Collins, they made a move for and moved up, and he's going to be a good player. Ereck Flowers is an excellent player. You know, he's made some good picks. And, you know, JPP, that wasn't even a football player. He knows how to identify talent with his coaching staff. I'm not telling his coaching staff is useless. Obviously, it's a team thing. But I'm saying I think he gets a job the next day, you know, and I don't mean that literally. I think he gets a job within that season or maybe the next season as a GM because of what he's got on his resume. So I don't think he's awful. I don't think he's costing your team at this point. I think he's had a lot of bad luck with some injuries, which he never makes as an excuse, which no one in the league should ever use as an excuse, a la Tom Brady, who throws to whoever happens to be wearing the same color. No matter how many guys he loses. And I just think I still think that they're solid as an organization and they just need some better players. They need some better luck with some injuries. And again, maybe Eli's starting to make some bad decisions that he can't handle, but everything seems to come back to pressure, Dennis, and that's that offensive line that's completely non-existent at this point.
Well, I'm just going to kind of, we're going to wrap up with this. I'll kind of leave it at this. If the roles have been reversed and Todd Bowles had done that, I would be calling for Todd Bowles' head, but you seem to be, as a Giant fan, and you're the Giant fan, and this is your organization that you watch. You have a history with them, and you feel comfortable with them moving forward. You don't blame Tom Coughlin for these. There's been some clock management issues with him in the past that have been questionable.
And
people have questioned it, and you can look at both sides of the argument.
You're missing the point again, and I think you do it because of where you are. You can't compare those two guys. You said if Todd Bowles had done this, you would have had a problem with him. Yeah, because Todd Bowles got no history. Todd Bowles is a rookie head coach. So you look at it and you go, does this guy know what he's doing? Does this guy have any idea what's happening? Is he just a coordinator that shouldn't even be a head coach? That's why you question it. I'm sorry, I got a guy who's won two Super Bowls who has a Boston College team that beat the number one team in the country.
So therefore you can't question him?
No, you can question him, but I'm not firing the guy over it. I'm not saying he's got to go next week. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying this isn't
a one-year thing with Coughlin. It's been a few years that he has not made the playoffs.
And my opinion is the cumulative effect, there comes a point in time when he's got to go.
And maybe this is the year, that's all.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you 1,000% there, Dennis. It all becomes a cumulative record. The problem is the positive side is pretty good. When you say I would have a big problem with Todd Bowles if he did that, you should because there is no positive side yet. He's building that side. He's still building bad and good from the beginning. He's only coached 10 games. So I don't have a problem with that. And you'd be absolutely right to say that. I'm saying every time I get a problem with Tom, every time I look at something, it goes on the negative ledger. And I think I'm being fair about it and saying, does the good still outweigh the bad? And at some point, you are absolutely correct. It's not going to. And it's going to be, hey, I don't care how many miles he still runs at 70 years old. His mind's not working the same. Or his confidence is misplaced. Or we just need someone to look at this team with a fresher look. I'll agree with you 100% there, Dennis. That's not the issue. The issue is when people come on and they go, oh, well, he shouldn't even coach next week. Well, don't be an idiot. You're not going to fire the guy.
I don't expect him to be fired. He should be allowed to finish the season.
Yeah.
He should be allowed to finish the season and then critiqued on his season.
Exactly. And his critique is going to be, Tom, how do you feel about it? And where do we think we honestly went wrong? And then they'll sit down without him and make that discussion. And again, he's not being – the semantics don't really matter, Dennis, but everyone's got to understand. He's not going to be let go. He's going to either get moved up or he's going to resign.
I agree with you 1,000%. I agree with 1,000%. We're going to move on from this. And, Joe, I knew Joe would – I know Joe is a staunch Coughlin supporter, and I had to play the other side. I had to look at the other side. I had to lay this out because it is the white elephant in the room. We had to lay it out, and Joe laid out his argument. And you know what? I mean, it doesn't – I'm a Jets fan. I'm glad I won. And you know, I think that decision led to the victory, then that puts the Jets in the position. And we're going to look at the AFC playoff picture right now first because I think it's more interesting than the NFC playoff picture, which we can get to real quick. But thank you. I just think that if you had woken up this morning and the Giants were 6-6, even though you believe that they're still a bad team, that even if they snuck into the playoffs with a bad record, with a losing record, and probably wouldn't go far, I think you would be happier with that personally than right now with the way the kind of things kind of went yesterday. That's just my opinion. Yeah. You can keep it to yourself whether that's true or not. That's my opinion because I know that I'm a lot happier knowing that the Jets didn't have to throw, you know, a ball on 4th-and-2 for a touchdown to win the game and they missed it. So that's kudos to the Jets. They get the W. They're 7-5. They're now technically in the playoffs if it ended today. A term I hate, especially with 4 weeks left. Look, there's 2 weeks left, and you want to kind of – don't forget, and forget about the tiebreaker scenarios. The one tiebreaker scenario we'll talk about, let's talk about the wild card first here. One quick thing before I get to that. The Patriots, by the way, are the third seed right now. Losing to Philadelphia, by the way, when a team blocks a punt for a touchdown, runs back a punt for a touchdown, and has a 99-yard touchdown return, you shouldn't lose again. Those are how good the Patriots are, even with all their injuries. They only lost by one touchdown. But the Patriots have fallen to the number three seed. Okay, maybe we'll go over this first, and we'll go over the wild card quick. My opinion is this, is that, and I could go over the Patriots' schedule in Cincinnati. Cincinnati plays Denver, and Denver has, my opinion is this. I think the Patriots are still going to end up being the number one seed, even though now technically they're the number three seed. Here's who they play. They play Houston at Houston. They play home against Tennessee. They play the Jets in MetLife, and they play Miami at home. That's their schedule. Cincinnati's got to play this week a game, a big game. They play Pittsburgh at home. Big game. That's a division game, and you know what? We're going to talk about Pittsburgh in a minute. They play San Francisco. They play Denver. You know, Denver-Cincinnati, one of them's going to knock each other off. So, you know, the Patriots wanted to win that game in the worst way because they didn't want to put themselves in this position. I still think they're going to win. And you wanted Philadelphia to lose that game because you don't want them hanging around in the AFC. NFC. You don't want them hanging around, but unfortunately they are. But let's go over the AFC a little bit here. So because we kind of know, you know, look, New England's going to win. The Bengals are probably going to win. Who knows what's going to happen to South? It's between Houston and Indianapolis. And my opinion is neither one of them is making a wild card. So the winner of the division is coming in. Kansas City, just want to quickly go over Kansas City's. They play San Diego at home. They have three home games. San Diego, Cleveland, and Oakland, and they go to Baltimore. If they go to 11-5, I wouldn't be absolutely shocked at all. 10 wins, I'm putting the Chiefs to the 5 seed. Here's why, too. They're 6-2 in the conference, and that's the big tiebreaker one. They're 6-2. They have this schedule. They got three home games out of the four. Come on. They're going to be the 5 seed. Here's where it gets interesting, because the three other teams I look at are the Jets, Pittsburgh, and I'm going to throw Buffalo in there just a little bit because they're 6-6 and they're playing the NFC East actually 3 weeks in a row. We'll leave Buffalo out for now, but I think they could kind of hang around and be a factor. We'll have to see.
They look good yesterday. Just,
they Buffalo. Yeah, Buffalo played well yesterday and they ended up beating Houston, so yeah, they kept themselves relevant. So here's Pittsburgh, and they destroyed Indianapolis last night. I mean, just destroyed them, 45-10. Antonio Brown went off.
Yep.
They play at Cincinnati, the game I just mentioned. This is a huge game. Now we'll take a prediction on it right now. I'm going to predict this right now. I think that Pittsburgh's going to win this game. I think Pittsburgh is going to win this game. I think Pittsburgh, here's their schedule: at Cincinnati, home against Denver, at Baltimore, at Cleveland. Come on, they're winning the last two games. They got to win one of these two tough games here. They could definitely – I think they can win maybe both of them, maybe. But at least one. That would get them to 10 wins. So I'm looking at two teams that I think can get to 10 wins. Maybe the Steelers don't get to 10 wins. Here's the Jets schedule. Let me give it to you quick. They play home against Tennessee, which they've technically been home two games, Miami, Tennessee, but they played a home game, quote unquote, even though it was a giant home game. They got to stay home for 3 weeks. They go to Dallas. They play New England. They play at Buffalo. So, you know, my opinion is one game here. Tennessee, again, no take no team for granted here with the Jets, but Dallas game, that Dallas game right there, you go that Dallas game, that's a wild card for me. Well, you got to see what's going to happen tonight. It's Monday, obviously. We don't know what's going to happen. If Dallas wins, it's much more relevant that Dallas will have more to play for. If they lose, I still think it's a tough game because they got to go to Dallas and play. That's that's the swing game for me in this because New England and Buffalo, we know that was a tough game. I'm not going to try to call those right now. Tennessee and Dallas are the two quote-unquote vulnerable teams that the Jets should quote-unquote beat with the bad records. But I'm really worried when they go to Dallas. You know, Dallas's defense is not that bad. They have given up the least number of points in the NFC East, I mean, as of before this week. So the defense is not that bad. You know what? They got the good offensive line, and they got to go. The Jets got to travel down there. Wouldn't shock me if the Jets lost that game. Let me put it that way. I'm not chalking up a W. So what do you think about that game?
Yeah, again, I don't think you can do that with anything. I don't think you should be chalking up W's anywhere because, as we've seen, anything can happen. But, you know, I agree with you because I think we find out a lot tonight about Dallas. You know, they haven't won a game without Romo all year long. Is this, you know, again, Castle looked a little bit better. He's played a little bit better. I think we learn a lot tonight to see if they're going to fight or if they're just going to mail it in, which is typical of Dallas when they get in these situations to just not even bother. But, again, being a division game, I think they play well tonight. You know, Marcus Mariota looked fantastic yesterday, so I don't think you can mark that down as a win either. And like you said, New England, they might have people healthy. They may not even bother playing. They may need the game. We don't know. And you know Buffalo's going to want to beat you no matter what. If you were both 0-15, they'd want to beat you. So not a question there that this is a big thing. I think we learned a lot about Dallas tonight, and then that puts it clears up a lot of things for you as to exactly how tough these last games are going to be for you, these last four games.
Well, especially that Dallas game. Again, what do you think about Pittsburgh? The two games here in a row against the two tough teams at Cincinnati, home against Denver. I mean, do you think they can go 1-1 in those games? I do. I think they're going to go 1-1. I think they're going to end up with 10 wins. That's what I think. Again, what do I know? Yeah. I picked the San Diego Chargers.
No, I agree. I think they'd easily get. I think they easily get three more wins. To tell you the truth, they may even get four the way that they're playing. They're
playing some good ball. Remember, they lost Roethlisberger for quite a while.
Yeah. No. We looked at them early and thought that there could be an issue there. But they played so well without him, and even though, you know, Michael Vick tried to lose a few games for him, now that he's back, they are just playing out of their minds, and they look so good. You know, obviously I didn't watch the whole thing last night. That would have been a real waste of time. But they really look good, and they just seem to be able to put it together. And you know, he's good. Roethlisberger's back. When he's healthy, he's fantastic. They got great wide receivers and. You know, D'Angelo Williams is playing well. I don't see them losing too many games because, you know, you look at Cincinnati and you go playing decent, they just don't have that.
They're not unbeatable.
They're not unbeatable. They still don't. You know, they still look a little off. Or there could be a little bit of point where they don't beat up on somebody and again they're going to wind up maybe being in a good spot. Early in the season here, where they don't have to fight for too much because of the division, but I don't know. I don't see a problem with Pittsburgh getting to 10. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't see a problem with Kansas City getting to 10 or 11. Again, can the Jets? My question is, can the Jets get to 10, and then we go to the tiebreakers, and we'll have to see how that goes. The Jets have three out of the four are in the AFC. Pittsburgh and Kansas City have the rest of their games are AFC matchups. So, for tiebreakers, like I said, Kansas City's got the leg up with the 6-2 conference record.
And if you get in the playoffs, you're rewarded with a trip to New England.
Well, No, well, right now you would be.
Right now.
But, you know, again, things can change, and that's what I'm saying about, you know, New England down the stretch when they play the Jets a few weeks from now, you know, that game, I don't know if they can just say, right, look, we're going to rest people because they want a bye week, and you can't blame them for wanting that. And it's kind of tight right now, and I don't know if 2 weeks from now if it's going to be, you know, it's just all set and done that, yeah, we're getting a bye. I'm sure they want the number one seed, obviously. They win, then they want the championship game at home. So they're gonna pull out all the stops, and we'll see what happens with Gronkowski and some of the injuries and some of the guys they got.
If you can get to that other wild card spot, you know, you get to go to Indianapolis, which is, you know, which would probably be a better matchup to start out with. I think if I'm in the AFC, I want to play Indianapolis in the first game.
Yeah, but you know what? You're right. But I think it's if Indianapolis ends up winning the division, you know, who knows what's going to happen. Or Houston. But here's the thing.
Houston,
I think Kansas City's getting five.
Yeah.
I think Kansas City's getting five. I think Kansas City will play the winner of the South, and it's either the Jets or the Steelers will play the number three seed, whoever that ends up being, which it very well could be Cincinnati or Denver. I'm going to say that I think New England's going to get the number one seed, at least the number two. So, you know, can the Jets, if they were to get in and get that sixth seed, can they go to Cincinnati or can they go to Denver and win that game? You know, you talk Denver, elite defense. I mean, that's going to be again, that's going to be where you say, well, can the team get in and make some noise? You never know. Better to be in and take a chance. But those are some very good teams. They're taking a step up in talent if they make it into the playoffs and end up going. My opinion is right now is that the Jets have to get to 10 wins. To make it to the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, and I know you do this. I'm not accusing you of looking ahead. I'm just saying I think that I don't think that Tennessee game is a walk on the field and win game.
No, I agree with you because they just played a very meaningful game to them. They were very emotional after the game, and maybe there is a letdown. And you know, Tennessee, they're 2-3 on the road. Hey, look, they're almost 500 on the road. They've only won one game at home.
42 points up against that Jacksonville defense, which is not terrible. And, you know, they got pass rushers, too, in Jacksonville. And, you know, they put up a ton. So, you know, it's interesting. I think Mariota's showing that, you know, whether he was one or two, he was the right guy to be there, as well as Jameis Winston. They are certainly showing that they probably deserve to be where they were in last year's draft.
Yeah, and one thing I really didn't like, one of the trade the Jets made for Brandon Marshall. Now Brandon Marshall's been fantastic this year. He's been fantastic, no doubt about it.
Well,
he is 31. My problem was rebuilding an offense around a 31-year-old receiver, but he's been fantastic. Yeah. He's been everything you could ask for, and then some.
That's what I said to you yesterday. I go, out of the big guys, the Calvin Johnsons, Dez Bryant, and him, he seems to have the best. I know he's had a few drops, but he seems to have more of a handle on the ball when he catches it than those guys. He seems to be the best of those real big receivers, as far as catching the ball and holding on to it.
Yeah, and you know, he does shield his body real well, you know, uses his body as a shield. He's got a big catch radius, he's good in the red zone, he's got 10 touchdowns this year. You know, he's opened things up for Decker. Decker's having a nice season, so you know, it's been a nice one too. And Fitzpatrick has played, you know, better than I remember him playing, certainly when he played for Buffalo. I remember those days. Let's go quickly into the NFC as the time is winding down and Joe's blood pressure is coming down a little bit, you know, after he defends the honor of Tom Coughlin. I know he's a big Coughlin fan, and I respect – it is one thing about Joe and I is that we go back and forth, but we respect opinions. So we definitely there's definitely a lot of respect there. But what's going on in the NFC here? And here's where I wrote it out. I'm just going to make it simple. Panthers 1, Cardinals 2. Mm-hmm. We'll put whoever wins the NFC North 3, whether it's the Packers or the Vikings, and we'll put whoever wins the NFC East 4. Okay, there we go.
And the Vikings looked awful yesterday, by the way.
Yes. And the Seahawks looked good. So let's just assume, for argument's sake, that the Seahawks are going to make it in. I have the Seahawks schedule here in front of me. They play at Baltimore. Cleveland comes to Seattle, then St. Louis comes to Seattle, then they finish at Arizona. I think Seattle's getting in. You know, and I think that Minnesota or Green Bay, again, Minnesota looked bad. We're going to maybe make an assumption Green Bay wins it. But depending upon what happens here, the five seed will be going to play on a road game, maybe have a better record, probably have a better record to go play the winner of the NFC East. And then the other team will go play. Actually, here's the funny thing. Minnesota and Green Bay end up playing each other in the playoffs. If it works out the correct way, because looks like the NFC North winner will be the 3 seed. So they would play the 6 seed.
Yeah, and they're one of the few. They're one of the few sports that doesn't disallow that. Like some sports, no matter what happens, you can't play your own thing. But the NFL allows that to happen. If that's where you end up, that's where you end up. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah. So the NFC is pretty clear. You're pretty clear. Right? I mean, we said this a few weeks ago, and then everything changed. Atlanta has fallen off the face of the earth. I mean, there's a lot of 6-6 teams in there, and you can look at some of them and say, "Hey, Tampa Bay, good for them. They're 6-6. Look, rookie quarterback, all the things. Hey, arrow up for them. Atlanta, you know what? They started off hot. Dan Quinn was the coach of the year. You know, they've been in free fall now. This is what we're saying about these last four games. I know we're trying to make some predictions, and we're doing the best we can from what we know right now. But, I mean, 4 games ago, we were saying blank. So 4 games from now, who knows what's going to happen? It's an eternity. But I think the NFC, I think we kind of know. I would put the mortgage on that it's going to end up being something like this. These 6 teams are going to end up getting in. The AFC, I'm going to get the 5 teams in. I think Kansas City is definitely getting in. I think the last one is up for grabs a little bit. And, let's just quickly take a look at some of the big games this week. You know, the Vikings are playing at the Cardinals. Again, that's a tough one Thursday night. That's a Thursday night game. Steelers at Bengals, I mentioned. The Giants are at the Dolphins, so that's a way to get yourself healthy there. That's a Monday night game. But the Steelers Bengals is the one, and maybe that Thursday night game you circle, take a look at that one, and then you circle that Steelers Bengals game because that one's got huge playoff implications right there. Like I said, I think the Steelers can come out and can beat the Bengals. But Joe, just want to thank you very much for putting up with my critique of your Giants. I didn't rub it in that the Jets are now that the Empire State Building was lit up in a specific color.
Oh, green. That ugly green color.
It was the game was exactly as we thought it was going to be, Joe. A tight game, an exciting game was going to come down to the end, and it did.
Yep. Do you have 3 minutes for me to go over the face mask on Aaron Rodgers?
Oh, yes. I totally slipped my mind. Yes, please do that. We would quickly – yes, got 3 minutes. Yeah. So Joe is going to go over the Thursday night game with the face mask on Aaron Rodgers because that was a big play that allowed them to get that touchdown and win the game. So go ahead, Joe.
Okay, so in years past, and we've done this at every level now, they have done away with the 5-yard face mask penalty. Okay, they did it a few years back. So if you watch the replay, you know, again, I notice different things on replays than most people do. What I watch in the replay is the umpire, who's back in his old spot in the middle of the defense, is looking directly at this hand come down that slides across the face mask, Aaron Rodgers, kind of grabs it a little bit at the end, but then slides off and gets him on the shoulder and pulls him down. In years past, and again, we've kind of made this into another thing where you have to decide what you've seen, which we're trying to do away with. But again, the NFL sometimes makes it worse instead of makes it better. You can only give a 15-yard face mask penalty in these days. So the umpire sees the kind of just grazing of it, kind of pulls it a little bit over. In the old days, easy call, 5-yard face mask penalty. The game still gets extended, but only with a 5-yard penalty, and it's not an automatic first down. Because you now have a decision to make, the umpire says, no, it's not. The white hat, the referee, who's standing behind the play, who never sees the hand actually grab the face mask, all he sees is the helmet turn and Aaron Rodgers kind of move his head. He calls it, and now he has no choice but to call it a 15-yard penalty. So actually a very poor job by the referee in that case because there's no way he actually sees the hand on the face mask because he's standing behind him. And he should have deferred to the umpire who was looking straight at it and said it wasn't flagrant, so it should have been no call, and that's because he didn't even throw a flag. So, again, we've turned these things into decisions instead of making them fairly straightforward, that it's got to be 15 yards and cost them a game. So, unfortunate, but that's where they are.
Well, you know what? If Detroit had executed their defense in a correct manner, they would have, even though that was not there, they would have stopped them. That's what I have to say. You know, to Detroit, I understand the whole thing with the face mask and they didn't get it, but stop that. Stop the Hail Mary play. Come on.
And you know what's funny, Dennis? When they talked to, again, and I think Caldwell's so overrated, it's ridiculous.
Yes.
You know, the guy who lost with Peyton Manning in Indianapolis gets a job right away. I think that they asked him after the game, why wasn't Calvin Johnson in the game? And why'd you take out your pass rushers? And he said, oh, I thought they were going to run that same lateral again, so I took them out.
Yeah.
Why would they run the same lateral? You're 15 yards ahead. You're on the 37-yard line, for God's sake. Why would you run a lateral play? It's Aaron Rodgers. It's not, you know, it was crazy. Just a horrible, horrible.
The lateral play that just didn't work before, and you got lucky to get a penalty to get another play to throw it down to the end zone. That put you in position to throw it to the end zone. Yeah, why Calvin Johnson wasn't out there, I don't know. Why they were protecting the sidelines, I don't know. And Jim Caldwell, I mean, maybe he should be looking for another job. He'll probably get another head coaching job right away. Last question for you quickly. I just wanted to go over this and then we'll kind of wrap up the show and another great episode. And, you know, again, Joe and I had circled this game on our calendar for a long time, the Jets Giants game. It was very exciting. It was great to talk about it for the last 2 weeks, but last question for you, which I just wanted you to clarify. I was watching the Patriots Eagles game, and I saw that Riley Cooper knocked the ball out of bounds with his hand on an onside kick, and that's that's a legal play. Can you explain why that's a legal play and why the KJ Wright knocking out of the back of the end zone when it was, I guess it was a fumble, was it a fumble? And if I remember correctly, why that's not legal? So if you could just explain that, and then we can kind of wrap up.
Yeah, it's Rule 12, Section 4, Article 1, illegal bat, and it's really straightforward. So I'm just going to read it to you. It's an illegal bat if either of these three things happen. Any player bats or punches a loose ball in the field of play toward his opponent's goal line. That's illegal. Any player bats or punches a loose ball that has touched the ground in any direction, if it is in either end zone, which is that play that you just talked about, the Seattle play, or any offensive player bats a backward pass in flight towards his opponent's goal line. So it's the direction if it's in the field of play. You can't do it towards your opponent's goal line, which is forward, obviously. So you can't bat it forward and get anything out of it. That's illegal. You can bat it sideways. You can bat it backwards all you want. If you're in the end zone and it's been grounded, you can't bat it at all. So that's the difference between the two rules that you talked about.
All right. So that's why it was okay for him to knock the ball out of bounds.
Yeah,
for
sideways
Cooper,
or backwards.
Cooper Riley to knock the ball out of bounds on that particular play. All right, well, with that, a fiery episode, Joe. We got Joe. Joe, I know you're a passionate Giant fan, but I know you're a staunch Coughlin supporter, and that's fine, and that's great. You know, he has, and I agree with you 100% with he has earned the right to kind of finish out the year because he has done a lot for the organization. But my opinion, and you can disagree with me all you want, is that maybe it might be time to look to go in a different direction for the Giants. This is not indicative of the same teams that I had seen in the past that Coughlin had success with. Why they're not building in the same kind of manner, I don't know. Whether it's just bad drafting, bad free agency, but they don't look like that physical dominant team that you feared years ago. They seem to be more of a finesse team in my mind. But that's the way I feel. But with that, I certainly respect Joe's opinion. It was a great game. I know, Joe, it hurt to lose that game because it was vital for playoff positioning, even if Joe doesn't feel that the Giants are really a contender. It still was more playoff positioning, and it still hurts to watch your team lose any week, no matter when it is. Joe, a great episode, a great analysis.
I know we're over time, but I want to read you. I just got the transcript from Tom Coughlin's press conference. Just one sentence. He says, obviously, the end of the game situation has been discussed many, many times over. I've tried openly, honestly, to remove that situation from happening, from our defense, from having to deal with that at the end of the game. Now, if that's not an indication that you don't have a lot of confidence in your defense and you're trying not to put them in that spot, you know, with the rules and all the different things. But he says it straight out, from our defense, from having to deal with that at the end of the game, meaning he wanted to do whatever he could to make it a 3-score game. And it backfired on him. But at least he's honest about the reasoning why he does it. He's just trying not to leave him out there with a chance to lose the game. So.
All right. Well, you know, Coach Coughlin has an opportunity to explain himself. I've heard the explanation. Mm-hmm. I've read the explanation. And you know what? Joe has his opinion about why he went for it. Joe said, and he is right, when he said he texted to me that he would go for it. I was thinking, and I was texting with a Jeff fan of mine, and he said to me, why didn't he kick the field goal? So there's varying opinions here. And you know what? And again, some objective person who didn't have any looking at the game, I would love to get their perspective. Certainly saw enough of that on social media. But with that, we're going to wrap up the episode. Joe, thank you very much. Thank you for your perspective. You know, I feel bad that somebody had to lose the game. Ultimately, somebody had to win. But I am happy that my Jets are in position to make a playoff push. We'll see if they'll make it. They still got some work to do. Look, it's going to be a dogfight. It's going to be a dogfight. The Jets want to make it in. This was one step along the way. But you know what? If they end up not making it, well, while it was nice that you beat your crosstown rival, so to speak, it won't really mean much if you end up playing golf at the same time they're playing golf. And with that... For Joe Tufaro, this is Dennis Agapito. Please join us next week for another great episode of Pro Football View from the East.